Welcome to the Entertainment Engine.
Hello, my name is Peter Moore.
And I'm Bex Gregory. And welcome to the next episode of the Entertainment Engine.
The idea behind this podcast is to provide clarity and information on the entertainment industry for new bands and artists, as well as existing creative industry people who are looking just to brush up on their knowledge.
You can listen to us on all streaming platforms and be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode.
If you want to learn more about what we do on a day-to-day basis, then please visit our website, seamlessentertainment.co.uk.
Each week, we'll be bringing you an in-depth area of the entertainment industry.
Also on the show, Bex has the facts of the day and a question for this week for our listeners.
And now, we are joined by a very special guest this week, US entertainment lawyer Melanie Rodriguez, who is helping artists achieve their creative goals. Melanie is a trusted advisor who provides expertise to creative entrepreneurs, entertainment entities, and music artists across all aspects of the industry. Here's the chat we had with Melanie earlier this week.
Welcome, everybody, to the next edition of the Entertainment Engine. And today we are joined by US attorney Melanie Rodriguez. Melanie, how are you today?
Wow, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so honored and excited to be here with you today.
Yeah, it's lovely to have you on the show, Melanie. It's fantastic to speak with you.
Same.
Before we get into it, Melanie, I suppose a couple of things to ask you is how was your weekend? And also the bigger question, really, how are you finding life with Mr. Biden?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, yeah. Let's start with the weekend because that's an easier answer. The weekend was good. We try and get out a little bit every weekend, kind of get some outdoors thing going. So weekend was good. We went out by the coast, did a small hike out there. So that's great. And as far as the Biden question, I guess it remains to be seen. You know, things have not really slowed down here in the United States just yet. We haven't really settled into the election, as it were. So I think it remains to be seen.
Sort of watch this space, maybe?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I think hopefully this week and, you know, after Thanksgiving, we'll have a little bit better idea of how everything's gonna turn out.
I think Becky and I had some really interesting conversations actually with a lot of people we work with in the US, Melanie. So it's their sort of take at them as well, especially producers and songwriters. They just felt a change was necessary and they just felt something just needed to happen in the US just to get it more on an even keel, really.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with that. And, you know, a lot of people felt the same way. So that's the reflection that you see, you know, in the current state of our affairs. It just hasn't been an easy transition, as I'm sure you've heard. So we're getting through it as best as we can on that front.
Well, I think that's all we can do, isn't it?
Yeah, it's challenging times.
Yeah.
I suppose you just sort of jumping straight in, Melanie. For several years, you've been practicing as an entertainment attorney, specializing in music. So how did you get started in the music business? And tell us a little bit more about your journey and where you grew up.
Yes, thank you. I always knew I wanted to be a lawyer. So for me, my love of music, entertainment, and art pairs perfectly with my chosen career path. I was born and raised in Austin, Texas. It was once dubbed the live music capital of the world. And the culture there is very music-centric. And I think it definitely lived up to its name and reputation and gave me a really great appreciation for music. I grew up around music everywhere, going to South by Southwest and festivals, walking down infamous Sixth Street. Peter, have you been to Austin? I'm curious.
No, I haven't been to Austin, Melanie. I lived in LA for quite a while and I lived in New York. And unfortunately, all the festivals I got involved with, I've never been to a US festival and I've always wanted to go to Coachella.
Oh, wow. Oh, well, please make that on the top of your to-do list. be it Austin or Coachella, I'll join you for either one because we're talking my language now.
Well, I think well, I'll get Bex and you get your boyfriend and we're in the sunset, have a beer and watch some bands. I think that's cool.
Yeah,
definitely. What a plan. Put that in for 2021 or 2022.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully. And I think, I suppose with your experience, and I'm really looking at the US and the UK, Melanie, where some great music, well, to be honest with you, some of the best music in the world has been showcased. Mm. You know, what sort of bands did you see in Austin? Did you sort of like go to, you know, pubs and clubs and see sort of unsigned stuff through to global acts? You know, what was the great experiences for you there?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's always around. So when we're talking about like South by Southwest, it would just flood with talent. I mean, you could go to any bar at any time and see some really great acts. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I mean, I've seen so many good acts, and even when they were like not even, you know, had the name recognition, whereas like now they're huge, like Gary Clark Jr., for instance, if you've heard of him, he's just on the map, and he put Austin kind of back on the map, but he would play at clubs on Sixth Street on a random Wednesday night as you were just walking by. So it was so cool to just be in that atmosphere and always having that connection. And so for me, you know, there was even music within my family. There were touring musicians, and my dad was a roadie, you know, for a Texas band when he was young. So almost every weekend, my parents and I would take road trips to see my parents' favorite musicians across the state and go to dances. So that was always fun for us. And I was always encouraged to be creative, and music became my hobby. So I'm really thankful for that.
Yeah, I think that sounds like you shared some great experience. And I think obviously with your dad being in the business of being a roadie, you got up close and personal with, you know, from a young age of actually, you know, being immersed into the live scene, which I think is really cool, to be honest.
Yeah, it's really inspiring. Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, it was great because we would go, you know, he would go see his friends play and we would just do it as a family. So that's kind of what, you know, was the catalyst that gave me a good foundation. And, you know, as I got older, when I had to make decisions about my career path in college, I was convinced that I was going to be a lawyer and go into law. And it wasn't later in my legal experience that I discovered entertainment law as a perfect dream career and a way to help the people in my life who were artists. And I found that even as active as the music scene is in Austin, you know, like we've talked about, it's not necessarily an entertainment law hub or an industry hub like you would imagine. Though I think that has changed in recent years and hopefully will continue to change. So for me, my exposure was limited at the time, but I remember vividly the lightning strike moment when everything changed. And I was out with friends a random night, and I met a friend of a friend who was an actor out in LA. We struck up a conversation about the industry. And when I said I wanted to be a lawyer, he asked if I had ever considered entertainment law. And that just blew my mind, because at that moment, I just knew that this was a journey that I had to take, right? So as I started down the law school path and researched everything, that's when I knew that LA was the natural progression for me and the place for me to marry my passion for music and my love for law. So I moved to LA sight unseen, packed up two suitcases and moved out here. So LA has really opened doors for me that I would not have otherwise had.
Yeah, no, I think that's, you know, that's a really interesting area, an interesting sort of story you're saying. Mm. And of course, you graduated from Southwestern Law School. And obviously, as you quite rightly said, you concentration within entertainment and media law. So what activities did you get involved with in campus, you know, in the campus activities? And what did you get involved with on day to day at law school, and, you know, sports activities, and what did you get up to?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm one of those people that loves school and learning. If I could be a perpetual student, I definitely would. As weird as that sounds, I really enjoyed law school, at least most of it, you know, most parts of it. And as enthralled as I was with the legal learning of it, I also put a lot of emphasis on getting outside of the law school bubble as much as I could so I could really grow my network. Since I came from Texas, I only really knew my best friend and a few Austin connections who had moved out here. So I was going to networking events for entertainment law or just generally. In law school in particular, they taught us early on that entertainment is a relationship business, and you know this better than anyone. It's not about what you know as much as who you know. Mm. So I held that as a guiding principle throughout school. So to that end, I was president of the Music Law Society and Entertainment Law Society, where I helped co-host on-campus events like speaker panels, award show parties, organize students to participate in off-campus events. So it was a really great way to balance out all the studying and density of the law with, you know, fun but important networking that could potentially set you up for success later. I was also fortunate enough to study abroad for a summer in London, studying international entertainment law, which was such a blast. And then from there, I also became involved with Grammy U. It's an affiliate organization of the Recording Academy, which is a wonderful organization for US and college graduates interested in music. So I highly recommend it, as they have chapters all over the US and they host a lot of artist meet and greet events with emerging talent and big artist names, album listening parties, and they even offer opportunities to attend the Grammy rehearsals and the Grammy Awards. So I always try to encourage students to keep connected in that way and with their school organizations.
Wow. Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, it's great that you've got, you know, the understanding as well from, as you said, going back to when you were younger, just being, you know, immersed in the music world. And I'm just obviously looking at your background as well. I understand that you actually play piano, clarinet and bass guitar. So, I mean, that's phenomenal. And did you play, you know, in a band when you were at school and college, or do you still get involved in anything musical today even?
Yeah, great question, Bex, and my favorite topic. I always joke that maybe I was a rock star in another life because I have such a love and affinity, deep respect, admiration for music artists and those who make music their life's work. As I alluded to earlier, music was more of my hobby and I played for fun. My parents got me started in piano lessons when I was 3 years old, and I did that for a number of years, and that really started my love for music. As soon as I could join a band in middle school, I was very excited for that. My cousin had a clarinet she gave to me, so that was the logical choice for me, and I played that in marching band all through high school. Then when I was going through my angsty teen years, I think I was obsessed with the bands back then, Third Eye Blind, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Incubus.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant bands.
Yeah, anything alternative, really. So one day I came home and I said, I think I want to play the bass guitar. And my dad gave me that look and kind of rolled his eyes. But the very next day, he brought home a bright red miniature bass for me to learn.
Wow.
And I did. Yeah, it was great. I did. I studied it. I brought books and tab books, played hours, taught myself how to play it. And I've been playing it ever since. What's kind of funny about it is, even though I really love it so much, it never really occurred to me to do it professionally. It was just more of an escape for me. Yeah. So I'm pretty equal parts right brain and left brain. So I'm deeply logical, analytical, and I really need to have a creative outlet, you know, to express myself.
Yeah.
So while I'm not currently in a band, I do have clients who invite me to jam with them or my friends who are musicians. Mm-hmm. I have this fantasy of playing down on Sunset Boulevard at Whiskey or something, maybe an open mic night someday. I'm really shy when it comes to playing in front of people though. So maybe when I can finally muster up the courage, I'll do so.
Yeah.
Well, no, I think it's really interesting that Bex and I get to talk to people like yourself, Melly, because we spoke to some really great people around the world. And just touching on something you said earlier, where you're a fan of Incubus, and it's just a little story I'll share with you. It's one of the bands I used to work with many, many years ago. No one's heard of them, and they were an unsigned band, and they disbanded quite a few years ago. But for performance wise, they're probably the best band that I've ever seen play live. And there's a band called King Kuda, and they're only four young lads, and they were a cross between Incubus meets Rage Against the Machine meets Foo Fighters. So when they performed, they were, honestly, Melanie, they were awesome. They were young lads, and they would go on stage and they would just literally blow that stage to bits. And people walk away saying, wow, this is just an amazing, amazing performance. So when you mentioned Incubus, I thought, oh, that's interesting, because, you know, different bands and different people have different influences. And I think that's a really cool thing to have.
Yeah, definitely. And I'll check them out. I'll check that band out. It sounds really interesting. I'm very
They were really good. They look like little schoolboys. And then when I go on the stage, you thought, wow, where do they come from?
Very cool.
No, so it's really great to hear how you sort of transitioned, you know, the influence that you had from a young age, and then, you know, and then coming into like law school. I mean, just thinking, actually, obviously during your law school, Melanie, you interned at Music Sales Corporation, now Wise Music, as an indie music publisher. Is this an area that you currently specialize in, as publishing is certainly, you know, a very complex area?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a great topic to talk about, Beck. So thank you for bringing it up. Mm-hmm. I think when you're talking about music, you have to really understand both sides of the equation, meaning master rights and publishing rights. Mm-hmm. And understanding publishing is a great place to begin to learn about rights ownership generally. But there's a lot of technical knowledge that goes into it. So it's absolutely crucial you have some basic understanding and a framework for understanding publishing, because that's half your rights. And it's crucial to know when you're trying to license or sell your music. In some sense, you won't have a complete music deal without the publisher involved in some way. And I was actually really lucky, because at the time I was interning at Music Sales, I was also taking the music publishing class in school, which was taught by Miles Feinberg, who is also the EVP at Music Sales at the time. So I could really get classroom learning with him and then have hands-on practical training during my internship. So I was exposed to many different types of publishing agreements and learned a lot about the business there. It was a really great experience overall, because it reaffirmed that I wanted to be in this space. So for me, I follow closely here in the United States, the National Music Publishers Association. They always put on great program and resources in this space, if your listeners want to learn more about it. And I'm sure UK has a similar organization, or, you know, feel free to reach out to me.
Mm. Yeah, I think with that area as well, Melanie, especially myself being immersed in the publishing and the sync world now with Bex, and I just think, I suppose, not a question but an observation from me to you, do you think sometimes it's good for a band to take a publishing deal with a recording deal with the same major, or do you think it's best to keep their publishing back and actually license that track to a different publisher? What would be your sort of take on that?
It depends on the goals of the band, absolutely, because, you know, different publishers offer different deals, and it depends on the type of publisher. You can go with some of the majors, or you can go with some of the indies. Typically, the indies will let the, you know, bands retain some of the ownership, or, you know, have some reversion in it as well. But it just depends. It really depends on, you know, where the band wants to go, how they want to use their music, and things like that. So there's some consideration. So it's not a one size fits all.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's another interesting observation. Do you think the major labels at the moment, Melanie, and major publishers are just relying on their back catalog, or do you think they will actually, new talent will come through at some point with the, you know, with the big majors? Mm,
that's a good point.
I think they're definitely doing both. You know, I can think of like Rhino Music, that's always re-releasing catalogs and using their back catalogs. But there's always such a demand for new music. Mm. And so they have to keep up with that demand too. And, you know, as we move into a world filled with entertainment, you know, you have a lot of entertainment choices. They have to keep up with you know, music, shows, TV shows, movies. And so there's a lot of opportunity to make those placements and have music be involved.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's, again, I think that's another interesting point, because Bex and I had a few conversations with a lady that came onto a podcast a little while ago, Tracy Webb, who's she's in London and she works for a company called Power Promotions, and they sort of break quite big dance music, and she does sort of a lot of remixes with some big acts across the world. And her take was, it's actually a good time to release music. Don't wait, because the way that people consume music, and we've seen people in the UK consuming Netflix and Amazon and now Apple TV, I think it's a good time to actually just be creative, really. What do you think, Bex?
Yeah, absolutely. Now is a really good time. You know, I speak to many producers, singer-songwriters, you know, the great time now is to release music, definitely, not to just sit and wait. I think to get creative, and a lot of people are doing that, and they're doing really well, because you just got to maximize online.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Yeah, certainly. It's certainly an interesting space. And so, sort of looking further as well, Melanie, I see you gain a lot of experience, breadth and transactional matters of intellectual property at a New York-based boutique firm, where you work with major artists, producers and entrepreneurs and movie production companies. And I think really the IP world is really interesting, especially with everything going online. I mean, what are your thoughts on this? And do you think the IP world is going to get stronger as time goes on?
Ah, yes. To talk about the first point, the Fried firm, I think that was one of my most favorite experiences in law school. And after the bar exam, when I returned to the firm, I was definitely exposed to many different facets of the industry and worked with some really great mentors there. At a boutique firm, there's a wide range of clients you service. Some are strictly entertainment. Some have multiple businesses that have entertainment aspects. Some, it's just about basic business formation and IP protection, like trademarks, copyrights, and the like. I think what people need to understand is that there's an overarching umbrella of entertainment, but under that umbrella, there's a wide spectrum of what that entails, right? So for me personally, every day I was given assignments and exposed to something new, and every day is different, which keeps the work fresh and interesting. So boutique law firms really handle the nitty gritty across the vast expanse of entertainment. Now, as for the IP world, which is a topic in of itself, I think what we're seeing now is that there are virtually endless ways to make money in entertainment. I would dare say that we are at the most prolific time we've ever been in terms of consumer access to music, TV, and movies, kind of like we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. That creates a scenario where content is shared and therefore the market needs to keep up with the demand. So there's a wide spectrum of services that elevate this increased demand, and it's not all centralized. So you have to make some tough decisions with the monthly subscriptions that you decide to take on, but which means now that everything is online and easily accessible. So that definitely opens up new possibilities, be it digital, virtual, augmented reality, just sort of across the tech spectrum as well. And with all of that innovation comes more complex legal problem solving. And there's more implications to consider now than just the content itself. There's financial decisions, ownership disputes, liability, and infringement. So it's all really fascinating. So that's kind of my short take on it.
Mm. Yeah, no, I think it is a fascinating world. And I think, especially when I was immersed in the festival scene, Melanie, and looking at the way bands can actually maximize their revenues, you know, through festivals, and then obviously over a period of time, the major labels thought, well, actually, maybe we can, you know, look at maximizing our money from festivals. And obviously overnight, right, bands lost their revenue, you know, whatever that percentage might be, 20, 30, 40% going on merchandise. And then suddenly the label wanted to be an agent, the label wanted to be a label, then it wanted to be a publisher, then it wants to be a promoter. And you think, right, you know, I sort of feel for bands as well, really, because even in this world we live in, a new band coming along, it's an absolute nightmare to navigate the industry. And I think that's really why Becky and I decided to do the podcast, because I think so many people struggle with this industry. They don't get told the right information until it's too late. And when it's too late, in a lot of cases, it's too late.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's hard because there's not one place you can really go, you know, to get this information. And it's good to have perspectives on it too, because what you have to say is going to be different than what some other person has to say or their experience in it as well. So I think it's really great that you do this.
Yeah. And Melanie, I know obviously with what you do day to day, I mean, you advise and provide expertise to number of creative entrepreneurs, entertainment entities, music artists, all across many aspects of the industry. Is it correct that I believe that you're currently launching, or have you launched your own personal law firm? And how's that all going?
Yes, thank you for bringing this up. And I'm excited to share a little bit of it. So I came to realize this year, as it's been a year of changes and uncertainty, that is 2020, all the industries have been affected and the legal field has not been insulated from this. So I felt I needed to pivot to realize the best course of action for me right now. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where if you don't find the opportunities, you have to create them, right?
Yeah.
And I'm really fortunate to have some really great mentors that have helped me along my journey and referred clients my way after I passed the bar, which here in the U.S., the bar exam, if some of your listeners might not know, the bar exam is the licensing test we have to take to become a lawyer. So I consider myself very, very fortunate in that respect to have some great people supporting me. And I've always had an affinity for business, and I'd like to think I have a business mind. So as my business grows, I find myself in the mind space of how to differentiate myself and compete in a saturated and pretty struggling market right now. So this is where I thought to myself, I think I might need to formally launch my own firm. I really want to focus on a variety of transactional matters for, you know, various entertainment clientele, such as music artists, small creative businesses, influencers, and handle things like intellectual property matters. It's in its early stages and I'm developing it more fully. So there's a lot of moving parts to creating a business, like business plans, business formation, digital marketing, advertising, website, all those things you need to do. Yeah. Can be daunting even for a lawyer like myself, but there are also the things they don't really teach you in law school. So you got to learn as you go. So I'm trying to put together some thought into it and build it methodically. And it's definitely coming along and being built. I'm just securing one puzzle piece at a time. So I'm really excited to share what I've been working on. So definitely keep your eye out for what's coming next.
Yeah. Exciting times.
And I think, I suppose when you just touched on with competition, Melanie, do you find it tough competition in LA with so many lawyers as well in the entertainment space? Are you still competing with a lot of fish in the pond, and it comes down to who you know at that time?
So it's a little bit of both. So the entertainment lawyers in LA, it's a pretty small community. You know, you have the big lawyers and everyone knows their names. And then you have the up and coming lawyers like myself. And so I don't necessarily see as competing, because I feel that there's so much talent out there. And, you know, it's incumbent upon the talent to find good people who are going to be good for their team. So it's a little bit of a mix. You know, there's definitely a lot of lawyers, but you know, we can't handle all the cases all the time. So, so we can have lots of clients to look forward to.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. There's one key thing you touched upon is it's about having the right team, because I mean, as we've seen, you know, just working in the entertainment industry, that having an attorney or a lawyer is really integral to actually being part of your team, whether you're an artist or producer. So, like you say, if someone enjoys working with someone, then they're going to go, hey, we want to work with Melanie. You know, we love what she's all about. And then recommendation comes and so forth. So that's how you grow. So I think, definitely agree with what you're saying there.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Oh, 100%. And I think also as well, Melanie, I think the way that the world has actually changed, and I think we're all on a level playing field at the moment. So I think everyone's sort of like starting from zero again, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, in a lot of ways.
So, you know, onwards and upwards, as they say. And I think looking at what you're doing as an entertainment attorney, what's the best part of your job? And we touched on it earlier as well, and obviously you fell in, you know, fell into it by obviously touring and with your dad and looking at music and being exposed to the music industry. Was it the area that chose you, or was it from day one you just wanted to be a lawyer?
Ooh, great question. So there's so many fun parts, you know, of my job, but I think the most gratifying feeling I get is when I hear or see the subject of the contract or agreement come to life. And by that, I mean, you know, hearing or seeing the physical manifestation. I always get chills when I, you know, hear my clients play or they show me the art that the agreement is for and what we've worked so hard to accomplish. So I love to see my clients happy with the end result. I know I'm not technically part of the creative process per se, but I feel like I am part of helping the creative process stay pure. I can help simplify the process for my clients and help, you know, my clients achieve their business goals so that they can focus all of their creative energy into their art.
Yeah.
As for entertainment law, I think it definitely chose me. I took the time to learn that I enjoyed doing legal work, and having those diverse experiences allowed me to learn what I didn't like and what I didn't want to do. So that's been beneficial. But being a personable and outgoing, I think my personality tends to lend itself well to a career in this sector of the industry. And every attorney I've met in this field has some personal connection to entertainment. And we really, really, really love what we do. I once read a quote that said, if music is your life, make it your living. So I think I've done a pretty good job of that in a unique way. I heard the call and I went after it.
No, I think I think that's quite a poignant point, actually, that you made. And that's quite a big word for me, actually. other bands that I work with, and I would say to them, you know, the two key areas that you really, in my perspective, that you that you needed were, one was a lawyer and one was a good manager. And I said, you won't get one without the other one. I said, but what you will get is if you, what the way I always would express it, Melanie, would say a particular band wanted to go and have a conversation with an attorney, I would say, don't take up their time in the day because they're busy. Ask if you can have a coffee with them at the end of the day or at the weekend or whatever their schedule is. And they would give you the time, build a relationship with that person. And then they might recommend a manager for you, or they might say, well, I know so-and-so down the road who's actually looking to take a band, and build it that way, build it organically rather than thinking you can't do it. But there's always ways that you can do it. And I always say to bands, be respectful of people's time, be respectful of what they know, and just put your foot forward properly. And then who knows what could happen down the road.
Yes. Yeah. I love that advice. Yeah. I think it's really great.
Yeah.
I just think it's important because, it is. I do feel for bands, but sometimes I also think bands need a bit of a kick up the backside as well, because I think they do need to understand what this industry is all about. And when you're saying to them, don't sign this deal, because if I put a band in front of you and that band's saying, well, Melanie says there's 10 points and one's really good and nine's really bad, but we want to sign the deal, I'll say, well, what bit of that do you not understand?
Yeah, definitely. And lawyers can help you find the manager. Like you said, you know, we can look over the management agreement and make sure that, you know, this manager is going to be good for you and aligns with your, you know, future creative goals.
Yeah. And what's your thoughts on, you know, with COVID-19 and how it's really changed the world? I mean, do you think that there will be more opportunities for new talent, you know, in the future, for artists or actors, for example, because the live sector has been hit obviously so hard? I know we've touched on it with the online opportunities and things like that, but what's your sort of take on it?
Yeah, well, obviously 2020 has been a really devastating year and one that no one ever really expected. So we all had very high hopes starting the new decade. And I just, for me personally, it's on a level of catastrophe, the likes of which I haven't experienced in my lifetime. And what makes it even harder is that it's just unpredictable and it's hard to adapt to something you don't know what's coming next on this large of a scale. We're seeing, you know, the massive layoffs from all the industries, including large entertainment companies, hiring freezes, production shutting down, and just the devastating effects to the live music space. It's really unsettling to me personally. And the conversation changes all the time. You know, the statistics change all the time. And I don't think anyone really knows what's going to happen until there's a vaccine and a safe vaccine. So, you know, will it ever go back to normal? Will we know what that is, or will industries, you know, forever be changed? So not to get all philosophical there, but.
No, I know it is a difficult time, and, you know, and things are changing daily, you know, with the government, you know, the talks of the vaccine, but obviously it's like you say, it's the testing, all of the investigation, making sure that it's safe, a safe vaccine.
Right.
So it's still that uncertainty, isn't it? And that's, I think that's what is very awkward for people, especially, well, in every industry, really, it's affecting everybody in the world. So it's it is. It's a devastating time. Like you say, it's scary.
Yeah.
But we have to just keep pushing through the best we can and navigating what other opportunities can we still do.
I think touching on what Bex is saying there, Melanie, it we still feel in the UK as well that even though we know the virus exists, and obviously it's been devastating because it's killed so many people, which is just, you know, awful and just terrible for those families that have lost their loved ones.
Right.
And I think people now in the UK are just getting fed up with being told information that, what are you telling me? Are you telling me I can go out? So now at the moment, they're now looking at putting 4,000 people into sort of big stadiums, football stadiums in the UK, so that people can go and watch live football, live rugby, live sport again. So they're not really sure what they're going to do. And local pubs are going to be shut down. You can stay in the pub till 10. You can have a drink till 10 and you can stay there till 11. But is the virus not going to, the virus isn't going to leave. It's not going to say, oh, Christmas has come, we're going to take time off. So we find it a little bit, is the US still a little bit like that? Is it still, is the rules still a little bit sort of silly, or, you know, to understand?
Yeah, and I think in the US, there's a lot of different, you know, the way our government is set up, there's a lot of different states across the US that are doing different things. And so it makes it really, really difficult to figure out what's going on and what's happening. Because if, you know, here in California, there's some pretty stringent lockdown measures. Again, you know, they implemented like a curfew at 10 p.m. and you know, some guidelines for holidays. But if you go to other states, it's not the same there. And so it makes it just really, really difficult to find a happy medium with it. And so, again, it's a lot of information out there, and it's all different. So it's very, very scary.
Yeah.
It is difficult. I just like you say, hope we get a vaccine for everybody so we can all start getting on a plane, and Bex and I can come and see you can be in that field and watch that band perform with a beer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can't wait for that day.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's going to happen next year, but 2022, I think that's, we've got to put that in a diary.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, something to look forward to.
Yeah.
So this is an interesting point, Melanie. What is the one thing you wish you had known when you began your career as an entertainment attorney? What's the one thing that nagged you or you found out? What was that one area?
Oh boy, that there's so much there. I guess I would have known how hard it is to market and brand and advertise and get your name out there as a solo attorney. You know, I followed the traditional path of working in a law firm straight after school, but I never really envisioned, you know, having my own firm so soon. So I think that's been the biggest surprise for me.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, I'd understand that. I mean, Bex and I've gone through that for years, and it is when you try and compete with the big boys, or you try and do, it's really, really difficult. And it's sometimes quite daunting, because you think, you know, we're all trying to do our thing, and suddenly you see an array of advertising and marketing from big companies, and you can't compete with it. So you just have to try and
There's a lot of competition, but I think if you can work, I mean, the entertainment space is very small, and everybody knows somebody that you know. So it is a case of, we always find that we now have built up a small niche network of people that we enjoy working with, and it works really well. So it's probably the same with yourself. You probably have got people that you know you can, you go to people that you know, oh, these guys can do this, and you trust them. So it's like your own little circle of trust, effectively. So yeah, that's how we've managed to push forward, really, haven't
yeah,
we?
Yeah,
exactly. I think that's great. I like that, the circle of trust. I'll have to start using that.
Yeah.
I got taught that from some of the guys I worked with out in Atlanta, and they're all sort of not going to put their age on them, but they're all retired, and you know, they've all worked for huge companies around the world. And that was one thing that one of them said to me one day. Mm. I attended the NAMM event in LA this year, and one of them said to me, "We move at the speed of trust." And I thought, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Mm. I really like that. That should be a log line in a company.
That is good, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I thought, oh, that's going to stay with me for the rest of my life. One of the other ones I learned was people get promoted to a level of incompetence. And that's actually quite true as well, to be honest with you. But I didn't say that. I didn't say that. But there we go.
There we go. Yeah. And here's another one for you, actually, Melanie, as well. Another tricky one. What would be your single piece of advice, again, but for people that are wanting to pursue a career in the entertainment industry today? Mm. What would that be?
Oh, great question, Bex. I saw this quote that says there is the music business, the music industry. Love the first, learn the second, and outsmart the third. And I think that's true for whatever role you find yourself, if you're working in music or any other entertainment segment. I think you can switch out music and put in another word there. So you don't have to be an expert in it, because that's what you hire, you know, experts to do, and you hire others to do. But you do have to have a basic knowledge so that you can understand the language. And you don't have to spend most of your time on it. Just, you know, set aside some time here and there to do a little research. That could be anything. Books, this podcast is great. Outside organizations that promote learning about the business, or ask people in your field about their careers. So just stay curious and willing to learn and dedicated to putting forth good product.
Yeah, that's great advice.
Yeah. I think so. I've not heard that, but I've learned something today as well. That's I'm going to take that one with me. That's really good, actually, because it was always the music business, and it's forget about the music. It's a business, but you've just taken it on a different. I quite like
one step further.
One step further. Yeah. I like that. So, another interesting question, Melanie. If you could change anything about the entertainment industry, what would it be? What would that one thing be? So if you're sitting down and I could give you a magic wand, and it's Harry Potter sitting next to you, and you've got this magic wand and you could change anything in the business, what would you do?
Well, it's hard to change just one. So I think I have two. Am I allowed to?
What do you think?
We'll let you have two.
Okay. And they kind of go hand in hand. I think there's two things that I personally wish I wish would change. And I see the tide changing slowly. And those two things are the first being, you know, more women and diversity in entertainment, and two, you know, paying artists, and especially indie artists, their fair share for their art. So I think those are the foremost challenges in the industry today, you know, among others. Talking to the first, you know, the statistics are very startling. In music, there's 2% women producers, and 12% of songwriters credited on top hits here in the United States are female. And for film, a USC study reported that only 4% of top films were directed by women in the 10 years from 2007 to 2017. And that's grown a little bit to 10.6% in 2019. That's here in the US. According to USCLA in a 2019 study, only 2 out of 10 lead actors in films are minorities. So it seems pretty dismal when you think about the numbers. And I think that starts with changes in, you know, hiring decisions, promotion decisions, and just creating a fair and equitable system that doesn't forget people and is more inclusive of everyone. I believe strongly that there's strength and evolution in new and different perspectives. And I think the entertainment industry needs to implement this a little bit more quickly than they have been. As far as the second for paying artists, there's been some legislation that has been passed in the US, like I'm sure you've heard, the Music Modernization Act, which is trying to make it easier and more efficient for artists to be paid. But there's still a lot of work to be done. And unfortunately, with COVID, it's disproportionately affected indie artists. So it's kind of a perfect storm right now. You don't want to see the industry suffer because of years long decline in paying artists. And now they're trying to navigate a pandemic on top of that. So those two just don't bode well for artists. But if I may, you know, I want to say that there's so many great resources and great organizations out there. So you've got to find the community or communities that are best for you. For me, I follow Music Business Association. They're always doing panels about diversity and general music knowledge, and it's really helpful. I believe if you join free as a member, you can watch their past events. And there's also a great group I follow on Instagram based out of UK. You've probably heard of it, Peter and Bex. It's called Women in Control, and that's spelled CTRL. And they always have really great programming.
Yeah.
I just love the studies that they put out and the statistics that they do. And another great organization that came to my attention recently is a great nonprofit organization based out of Miami, and it's called Girls Make Beats. And that gives young girls tools and education to produce their own music. And I just think that's like the coolest thing ever. So I think while the industry is making great strides, it's taken longer than it should, unfortunately.
Some really, really interesting points there, Melanie. And I couldn't agree with you more, because my first boss in the industry was a female, and her expertise in the business was absolutely phenomenal. I learned a lot about promotion and PR and marketing from her, and she was really good and went on to work with some, you know, fabulous artists across the world for, you know, for decades. So I don't understand this. I suppose from a male perspective as well, sometimes I think men can just be a little bit, I don't know, it's my way or it's not the right way. And I think if you've got a selection of people around the table from whatever colour, creed, male, female, wherever you come from, I think it just makes for a better organisation.
Yeah, totally. I think you do need that diversity, because everybody's should be equal. That's the way I see it at the end of the day. I mean, everybody's got a brain. Everyone's got a thought. It shouldn't matter whether you're male or female to be able to get a job done. If you're, at the end of the day, if you're good at what you do, it doesn't matter who you are really at all. So, yeah, I completely, it's good that there are those organisations to, yeah, make it more awareness on that. I definitely agree. And I don't know why it's taken so long.
No,
really.
No, I don't. And I think to touch on your point earlier as well, Melanie, with indie artists, you know, we've been fighting for indie artists, some of the bands that I've worked with for years. And, you know, when you've got the big corporations, which I'm not going to mention, you know, they just close the loopholes. They don't want you to make any money because they want the major acts to earn all the money.
Exactly.
And you think, I'm just getting fed up. And I'm getting, I actually get really fed up with seeing the same actors, seeing the same people going around and around and around and around again on the merry-go-round. Yep. You don't see anybody new because they won't let them through. And it gets, you know, some of the agents, which I'm sure you've been aligned to, at big companies, they're not interested unless you're going to earn them $1 million in 5 minutes. And you think, we've got to go back to actually being creative and actually nurturing the acts where we did back in the day when the David Bowie existed and the Eric Claptons and the Beatles and Elton John. It's got to go back that way, because I think at the end of the day, this is why I sort of, it's getting on my tree now, because it gets me really angry, because I get really, really annoyed with this, because I think Spotify have just got to start paying the acts what they're due. And I think the major labels have actually got to start doing something about it as well. They've got to set a division up. They've got to set some money aside in this COVID pandemic and actually do something with the indie sector rather than keep putting out their back catalogue that everyone gets fed up with.
Right.
I'll shut up now. I've had enough.
That's Pete's rant for today.
Well, I think you bring up a good point. You know, there for me, there's no shortage of people who want new talent. there's no shortage of platforms like TikTok or YouTube or IG Reels where you can become a viral sensation overnight. And as we've seen, you can become a resensation like Fleetwood Mac. So at the end of the day, people want good music and they want good talent and they want good entertainment. So there's no shortage of creative talent out there, but sadly, not everyone's going to be visible. But it's possible and it happens. So my advice for your listeners out there is to really use this time to invest and hone your craft, learn the business, learn new things, make new connections during this downtime we probably would not have otherwise had. And this can be a good thing to do also when things return to normal. So if anything, we've seen that we crave and we need human connection. So start from that point and really give it your all and find good people for your team, like a good lawyer.
Definitely. And just to get aside from what you obviously do on a day-to-day basis, Melanie, but what would you like to do in your spare time? Have you got any sort of hobbies or anything outside of music law?
Do you have any spare time?
Yeah, if you have any spare time.
if I have spare time, but yes, I have a few. I love going to festivals and live shows, if you haven't gained that information already. I pretty much plan my year around festival season and what festivals are happening where, be it regional or international. I once heard it referred to as festivals or the new record shops, because you can discover the new artists. So it's my ultimate happy place. And I think they're just the greatest things ever. And this year I've started to get outside more and going on nature adventures. So I hope this will continue into the future. I'm an adventurous and I love to travel. So I aim for at least one international trip a year if it happens. I also love to network. I know that sounds weird and some people hate it, but I'm always going to, you know, continue in education or meetups. Now they're virtual, but I always like to do them, you know, in person before. And I also love meeting new people and learning about their stories and their advice. And to finish up, I think I want to take up sewing at some point so I can make my own fashion.
Oh, brilliant.
Okay. Mm. Wow. That's cool.
Good.
So I would see you at Coachella sitting down making a scarf or something.
Exactly.
So,
where did you get that wonderful top? Oh, well, I made it
exactly.
Myself.
Yeah. And then we just do a pop-up stall, and hey presto, we sell a load of t-shirts.
Absolutely.
So what was I suppose really just to sort of finally touch on, you said you attended, you was in London for a while, so did you ever get a chance to go to any UK festivals or any UK music
like Glastonbury or anything like that,
Tea in the Park or Isle of Wight Festival?
Yeah, so it was hard because I was studying, so school had to come first. Yeah. But I was able to go to Wireless Fest for a week, which was great because, you know, I could see some acts that I really hadn't gotten a chance to see in the U.S. before. They were all there, so it was so cool. And then I went to Tomorrowland in Belgium, so
okay.
That was really fun.
Yeah, yeah.
But I wanted to do Glastonbury. I did, but I just didn't have time to do it with school. But it's on my list for sure.
So what is what would you say is the best live performance you've seen at a festival?
Well, you really have to put me on the spot there.
Ooh. You've probably seen so many great bands.
Yeah.
I've seen so many.
We got her. That's a good question.
Stumped you on that one.
Yeah, you stumped me there. I'm not usually stumped, but that is definitely the $1 million question right there.
It's difficult, isn't it?
It is hard one, isn't it?
It is difficult. I took Bex and I, we went to one of her very first festivals, because she knew me from my festival background, and I said, look, I'll take you to a big festival, and she knew what we did, and you got to see, was it Kasabian? And
it was a great lineup. There was Kasabian, Foo Fighters and Kings of Leon on the same night, and Prodigy as well, so it was an immense lineup.
So,
well, Kings of Leon was definitely one of my favorites there at ACL Fest a few years ago.
They're
they were
so
they
good.
Oh, they sounded
they have so much energy. they can just get the crowd going like none other. So yeah, that definitely comes up as one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Also Outkast.
Oh, okay. Outkast.
And they have so much good energy and I've never seen a crowd dance so much. So that was probably one of my favorites, you know, thinking back on it.
Yeah, Outkast, Andre 3000. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's really great. Really, really good. Mm-hmm. I think, when Bex left the Isle of Wight and I, you know, she's up close and personal with like Kasabian and Kings of Leon and you saw the Kaiser Chiefs as well, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, you need to see, I think for an artist perspective, you need to go and see what the big bands do. And, you know, generally, I've never seen a real bad performance, to be honest with you. And it's just a great experience. The festival scene's great. You get a cold beer and pizza, whatever you want. Yeah. And it's great.
Yeah. It's a great atmosphere, isn't it? Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's funny because when you see, you know, some of the big lineups like Coachella, they always have the small print artists. And a few years later, those small print artists end up being the big headliners. So, I think there's some power in that.
Yeah. I had a very good friend of mine, Melanie. He was an agent for a long, long time. And his roster was Radiohead and Subways. He pretty much had everybody. And he went to Glastonbury this one year and I think he had too much to drink and he stumbled into this tent and he basically found Beth Ditto. And he came back to me and he said, I just found this American artist. He said, she's a three-piece band. Mm-hmm. He said, it was a muddy field. He said, it was tipping down with rain. He said, it was terrible outside. He said, but the gossip, he found this band called The Gossip, he told me, and it was Beth Ditto. And he said, it was the best performance he'd ever seen. He said, she was phenomenal.
Wow.
And he went on to actually represent the band for a long time. So
And that song that they did has now been licensed and in sync
and
on a massive advert, still going around today. So it's
and I'll tell you actually, if you haven't had a chance, Melanie, when we get out of lockdown and you get back to see live acts, one act I would say for you to see if you haven't seen him is Moby. Moby live was. Yes. Phenomenal. So if you get a chance, that's my recommendation for you.
Okay, definitely will. I'll say Peter sent me.
or Chemical Brothers, Moby or Chemical Brothers, either one.
Oh yes. Yeah, Chemical Brothers is definitely that's on my list. But it's hard because they don't really tour or do a lot of shit.
No.
Fine.
Great music though.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Wow. And last of all, Melanie, where can our listeners connect with you online?
Yeah, definitely. You know, like I said, I love meeting emerging artists, seasoned veterans in the industry, or even students who are considering a path into entertainment law. So you can find me on LinkedIn, where I share, you know, industry events and entertainment law news and tips. And so just search for my name, Melanie Rodriguez, and I'd love to connect there. You can also visit my website and blog, www.melanie-law.com, which has my contact information and information about my services.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Sounds good.
Well, I would say it's been a pleasure to talk with you, but I'm not sure if it has. I don't know. It's been all right, really. It's been okay. You know,
not been too bad.
It's not been too
bad. Well, this was so much fun for me and I thank you both so much. I hold your podcast in such high regard.
Oh, well, yeah. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been really great to learn about your background and how you know, your whole journey, which it's really inspiring and interesting. And I'm sure our listeners are going to find it really, really useful as well.
That's why we wanted to sort of, I suppose, you know, using your word as well, Melanie, a breadth of knowledge for people. Cause I thought when we decided to do the podcast, I thought, well, we've got to get people from, you know, what you're doing as an attorney through to, you know, what a Hollywood producer does, through to what a recognized global music producer does, through to an agent. So we just felt it was, you know, getting an array of lots of different knowledge and expertise to, you know, try and do something positive, really.
Absolutely, and definitely needed in these times. So thank you for doing what you do.
It was great speaking with Melanie on the show this week and learning about her entertainment career so far. As a legal professional who wants to see her clients thrive in their creative and personal endeavours, striving to provide outstanding personalised service, whether you are a rising creative entrepreneur or a seasoned veteran. Melanie provides lots of great tips and points to help musicians, bands and creators move forward in their entertainment journey. We look forward to catching up with Melanie in the new year. And now it's that time again. I'm heading over to Bex for our question of the day.
Let's have a quick recap onto last week's question. What is the name of the Beatles' first album? And the answer is Please Please Me. And we want to give a massive thanks to everybody who's been sending in their answers to the questions this week. The response has been really great. And also a big well done to Bill from Liverpool in the UK who got the answer correct. So well done for that.
Well, that's all for today's episode of The Entertainment Engine. And thanks for listening.
Join us again next week for our Christmas special episode, which will be our last show until we start again with season 2 in the new year for 2021. And we'll have more great guest interviews and more industry advice and tips.
So make sure you subscribe to the podcast and follow The Entertainment Engine on Facebook and Twitter for all the latest updates.
It would be great to have your feedback on the show, so you can always drop us a message at any time. That'd be great.
Thanks for listening to the show and stay safe.
The Entertainment Engine.